This is the Catholic Movie Guy Podcast.
Very exciting times we live in. Election right around the corner. Catholic Movie Guy Podcast. I mean, this must be what, you know, what it felt like to be alive at the time of the moon landing. That's the only thing I can really think of that compares based on the feedback that I've gotten so far. So you are among the lucky few if you're listening to this right now. And on today's podcast, I want to kind of commemorate the fact that we're on the cusp of an historic election, one with serious consequences potentially. And I figured that, you know, regardless of the outcome of the election, we might be getting into World War III any day now. So I wanted to go ahead and talk about a war movie. Coincidentally, a great war movie just came out, which I just saw, called Hacksaw Ridge. And it's Mel Gibson's first directorial effort since Apocalypto. So that's going to be the main subject of today's introduction. I'm going to give a brief review of that, and then I'm going to bring on the Tim Man. I'm going to bring along the Tim Man to discuss not maybe the five best war movies ever, but our five favorite war movies, each of us. There's a lot of overlap, but a couple differences, so we'll get into all that. So before we get started, I just wanted to promote myself, which I really, really don't like doing, despite what my friends may say. If you want to help the podcast, if you like it at all, or if you like me at all, or at least if you're not my enemy, the best thing you can do is subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Even better than that, set it up for automatic downloads. Even better than that, leave a 5-star review, only, of course, no one or two, on iTunes. It's not that easy, but if you go to that extra effort to do it, I would truly appreciate it. You can also follow me on Twitter, at @CathMovieGuy, and on Facebook, there's a page for the Catholic Movie Guy. Go ahead and like those, follow me, and you can send any feedback to CatholicMovieGuy@gmail.com. So now on to Hacksaw Ridge. I went and saw this with a good buddy of mine named Elliot. I call him the Brewmaster General. I don't know if I ever said that to his face, but, you know, he's a brewmaster. So I call him the Brewmaster General. That's what I do. That's just how it is. And we went and saw this very, very late at night. So I was like, am I going to stay awake through this whole thing? I wasn't really in the mood to watch it. The basic story centers around a real person, Desmond Doss, who was a conscientious objector during World War II. Except that he wasn't really a conscientious objector at all. He was much more of a willing participant who volunteered to join the army. But because he was a Seventh-day Adventist, he only wanted to join as a medic and did not want to so much as pick up a gun, much less use it against anyone. Now, obviously, this is the Catholic Movie Guy podcast, and we know that there are just wars, and there is always a reason to use violence in self-defense or defense of others. So while his particular belief does not exactly square with Catholicism, that's not the point of the movie, or its Catholic director, Mel Gibson, or this podcast. The point is that it's a profile of a man who was brave enough and courageous enough to stand up for a belief that was truly and sincerely held, despite not only the pressures of the outside world to conform, but also the real grave danger to his life that was involved. I liked the movie a lot more than I thought I would going in, because I thought it would be, no offense, you know, kind of a saccharine treatment of this man who is a true hero. The first part of the movie is really a coming-of-age story, which is, you know, typical when you get a biographical movie like this. But it wasn't, you know, the full treatment of his childhood. What I was really impressed about in this movie is that Gibson employed such an economical sense of storytelling. The movie was, I think, like 2 hours and 20 minutes long, and it could have been much, much longer. He manages to show us in like three, maybe four scenes from this kid's childhood and his young adulthood, everything you need to know about his character, his family life, his mother's temperament, his father's temperament, their backstories, their history, his brother's temperament, their history together. And exactly what gave him his deeply held belief in nonviolence. He also sets up, Gibson, an incredible romance story between a young adult, Desmond, and his soon-to-be wife through the use of maybe 3-4 scenes only. That is, you know, more convincing and romantic than many, many, many romantic comedies and dramas out there. So that was what impressed me about the first part of the movie. He perfectly set up this man's character and life story in such a short amount of time, very impressively, but also without sacrificing any of the emotional depth or depth of character that you would think would be sacrificed by confining it to such a short period of the film. The second part of the movie transitions into like almost a courtroom drama, which is something I haven't seen many reviewers touch on. The second part of the movie goes, you know, with him in training and, you know, the conflict between what he thought he was getting into, which is becoming a medic, only he wouldn't be asked to touch a gun, and the reality of boot camp, which is, you know, your sergeant wants you to pick up the rifle and do drills. And the machinations of the sergeant and higher-ups trying to get him to quit, trying to get him to compromise his belief, which literally ends in a court decision, which I, as a lawyer, you know, you got me in my sweet spot right there. So that's the second part of the movie. And then finally, the third part of the movie, war in the Pacific Theater against the Japanese. I've seen many war movies. I've seen many violent movies. I don't know why, but this movie particularly touched me through its use of not only realistic violence, but also I don't think the violence is excessive, but in addition to being gory, which it definitely is gory and not for everyone, it was also touching even in its goriness. A lot of times when you have a super violent movie, that violence can become so grotesque or over the top that it becomes a caricature, and instead of moving you, it actually, you know, not just it can turn you off, of course, to watching the movie at all, but it can also desensitize you, but it can also make you almost laugh at how ridiculous the violence is. Some people have accused Gibson of that even in The Passion. I never agreed with that, but I can see it. Some people accuse Gibson of that with Apocalypto, which I can see a little bit more. People have accused recently, like The Revenant, of the same thing, a kind of violence porn that becomes either ridiculous or laughable or disgusting. In this movie, I guess I could see someone saying that, but I would you know, strongly disagree. I think that the gore here serves to highlight not only Desmond's heroism in what he's doing, but also just the horrors of war. And I said to the Brewmaster General as we were walking out of the movie, I said, I just can't imagine the fortitude that it would be required, not just to do what Desmond did, if you felt called to that, but to be any soldier in that war or any other war, to voluntarily you know, stand up and risk not just death but horrific death. And in this movie, it portrayed that balance between the gore, the horror of war, and the heroism and brotherhood of the soldiers better than maybe any movie I've ever seen. So just to wrap up, the movie presents Desmond doing all these heroic things in the war. Of course, I won't spoil it for you. You can Google his story. It's a real story. It's not that unknown even before the film, and find out for yourself. And he does such heroic things in such a ridiculously heroic manner that you're like, oh, come on. You know, this is one of those movies where they're just embellishing facts to embellish them. But then at the end of the movie, Gibson, I don't know, it was an interesting choice that you don't see in every biopic, tacks on some real-life interview footage from other participants in the movie and Desmond himself. And you learn that, no, actually the things that he did were real. And not just that they were basically real, but some of the more ridiculous things that you thought in the movie must be embellishments were absolutely not. So coming out of the theater, I was blown away. My expectations were, you know, I thought it would be a good biopic movie, maybe like an 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 kind of thing. And I was blown away. Instead, what I got was something that moved me in a very real way, and in a way that I haven't been moved by a war movie since really Letters from Iwo Jima was probably the last war movie that moved me in the same way. Great comeback for Gibson, one of my all-time favorite war movies right now. And of course, you know, you need a little perspective to evaluate any movie. I like to watch at least 2-3 times before I give my final verdict, but this definitely has a shot at being a 10 out of 10 all-time classic. So I encourage anyone who's interested in the subject matter, who's a fan of Mel Gibson, you will not be disappointed. Please go see it right now. Go see it 2 or 3 times. It's super violent, but outside of the violence, there's absolutely, that to my recollection, no objectionable content. I mean, there's a little bit of language, stuff like that, but for grown-ups, nothing that that moved the needle for me, certainly. So I would encourage anyone to go out and see it ASAP. That being said, you know, now's the time of the show where we take a step back from hearing me drone on and on and on about a movie and we get an outsider's perspective. Today, as usual, that outsider is my wife.
Hello.
Hi, honey. How's it going?
Just peachy.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, do you know? Have you heard of this new movie, Hacksaw Ridge? The new Mel Gibson movie.
I hear things. I've heard things.
Right. Did you like that?
Oh, I have no idea.
Why?
Well, I didn't go see it. You went with Elliot.
Is that a problem? Or is that good?
No, not at all. No, it's great.
We're good. We're good. Very good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, no, we're fine.
So I am joined, per usual, with a bourbon in my hand by my brother, my BFF, my Brodini.
I don't like the sound of that.
The Tin Man.
That's me, the Tin Man.
And we're back!
That thing you do.
Here on the Catholic Movie Guy podcast. Incorrect. And today we're doing a war theme. I just reviewed Hacksaw Ridge, which you didn't see despite my impetuous attempts.
I had a previous engagement with a glass of bourbon and a nap.
Certainly I was importune in asking you to go.
I was importune.
Well, you couldn't go.
Right, but you importuned me.
Right. No, I was importuning you.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what I mean.
That's right.
Yeah. I feel that's important, to importune.
I got you.
But you didn't go.
No. No, Sherry didn't want me to go.
Right, and who is the Sherry of which you speak?
She's my beloved and lovely wife.
Right, and do you think that if you went, would she like that?
No.
And
she
why
would not like it.
And why not?
She doesn't like a whole lot of stuff.
Okay. And does that stuff include you going to the movies?
Yeah, that's right. Going to the movies takes me away from home.
Yeah? Yeah.
So she likes you?
Yeah, she likes the Tin Man.
And why would that be?
Well, I'm irresistible to women. I have 8 children.
Incredulous look.
Wink.
Anyway, so we're going to talk about war movies today.
All right.
And Tim and I have come up with a very not scientific top 5 war movies of our own. This is not necessarily the 5 best war movies, but just our 5 favorite war movies. Very unscientific. There's also a lot of gaps in our personal knowledge. For me, shamefully, I've never seen Saving Private Ryan, never seen The Deer Hunter, never seen Thin Red Line, which I think I would love because I really like the director. But any gaps?
I have seen Saving Private Ryan,
okay,
but wouldn't put it in my top 5.
Whoa! Controversial opinion alert. But in any event, how do you feel about war movies generally? Big fan? Not big fan?
I'm usually not a fan of war movies at all. I mean, I don't...
At all?
No, not really. No.
But you really like, Band of Brothers and stuff. You really do like that stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are themes that come out in war. They're a lot like sports movies, in a sense, without, you know, sports movies don't have as many people dying. But that theme of...
Although there are many deaths.
Yeah, I mean, but things that are bigger than yourself, camaraderie, a cause, perseverance. I mean, these are all common to those things, but I'm not a big sports movie guy either.
Disappointed sigh. In any event, let's go ahead and get the ball rolling. What is your 5th... And okay, define terms. War movies. Not any movie that has a war in it. Certainly, like, Capture the Flag doesn't count. Toilet Paper Wars. Those things are out. But not even a movie that has a war tangentially. This has to be, it's about the war. It's, you know, that's the creamy middle of the war. So go ahead. Number 5, The Tin Man.
Okay, so this one skirts that definition, but I would call it a war movie in a sense. That's Henry V, the Kenneth Branagh version.
Provisional, technical.
What?
We're talking about real wars, that happened to America. Those kind of wars.
So a war between England and France that lasted over 100 years isn't a real war?
To me, no. But go ahead. I'll let you finish. Taylor, I'm going to let you finish. Go ahead.
Okay, so with the brand on Henry V, what you have is not only is it wonderfully acted and directed, but you have the cinematography. It's filmed as though you're at a theater watching on stage. It's a fixed shot pretty much in every frame of a what could be contained on a stage.
Sounds exciting.
It is, and Branagh's Henry V, of course. There's a lot of whatnot over who's going to be the French king, and they come to blows, and he kicks some butt.
And the screenwriter, is he a known author? Or?
It's an adapted screenplay by Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah, but who wrote the story?
I'm not sure.
I'll have to IMDb that. Anyway, respectable choice. I'll go to my fifth choice, which isn't really fifth, because we're not like scientifically ranking these. This might end up being my favorite, as I said earlier. It was that good. Hacksaw Ridge. The Tin Man hasn't seen it, so I'm not going to ruin it, but he should go see it. Sherry should let him go see it. Sherry should even see it. What the heck? She might like it.
She wouldn't like it.
She wouldn't like it. That's true. All right, let's go to your number four, The Tin Man.
My number four, I guess I would put Platoon.
This is my number four as well. Go ahead. What's your reasoning?
Well, a common theme in all the war movies, and maybe you're going to bring this out, is the fact that war isn't that great, and the glorification of war for its own sake isn't that great. Now, I am no left-wing pacifist by any means, but there should be a reason you go to war, and you should go to war for victory, and you should do what it takes. And nothing symbolizes more the lying to get into war, the futility of war, and the absolute crap-a-thon that American foreign policy is than Platoon.
Okay, I would just say that, you know, I remember watching Platoon in high school, and it was probably the first war movie that I had seen that wasn't a rah-rah. You know, Oliver Stone, of course, is an acquired taste for some, but I think in that movie, his style comes out while not being so pervasive that it overpowers what he's trying to say. One thing I will say about that movie as an adult, when I was younger, I was more vulgar even than I am now, but as an adult, the language in that movie is very jarring. I find it very realistic, of course, but the amount of profanity and vulgarity is, I mean, even for that kind of a movie, is super high. It's relentless. It almost wears you down. It wears you down in kind of the way that the war is wearing the characters down. So, not for everybody. I wanted to mention it too, but it's like great
that.
Acting too.
Yeah, I like that movie. Because really, Charlie Sheen is being born into this war scenario, and he's got two different fathers, and which of these father figures is going to win out, and what's the cost of conscience, and what are the ruthless willing to do? It's a terrific film. Plus, you do get a horror of just that, it not knowing why you're fighting, where you're fighting, where it's coming from.
Yeah, and I did want to say that it was definitely, I think, Charlie Sheen's second best acting performance of all time,
next to Ferris Bueller.
Oh, whoa! I'm going to allow that. You're right.
There's now, somebody Ferris I think you Bueller's need to talk
two,
to.
This is three. Ferris Bueller's two. Number one is Ricky Vaughn, and it's not close.
I ain't never seen it.
Major League.
That was a horrible movie.
That's a technical. Look, it's not a great film, but that's an outrageous
it's
statement.
Maybe the worst thing ever put
Stop.
On film.
This is suspension for 3 seconds. And we're back! So here we go. I'll go with my next movie on the list. I've just realized, I think, based off our similar tastes and prior discussions, that the rest of the movies we are in a complete agreement on. I don't really know the order of these final three, but I'll go ahead and give them in the order that I wrote it down. I'll go at three with Full Metal Jacket. Here's why it's three and not one. Kubrick's a master. We already talked about Kubrick's directorial acumen, and that's a correct pronunciation.
Bingo.
With The Shining.
Shining.
The Shining.
Thank you.
So I'm not going to dwell on that. The reason Full Metal Jacket is both great and only three for me right now, and I'll rewatch it again, it could shoot up to one, is that the first half of the movie is so much better than the second half of the movie.
Wrong again.
The second half of the movie is intentionally kind of an anti-climax.
You can't have either half without the other half.
I'm not going to spoil what happens in the first half, but the first half ends with the most tragic event and the center of the story. The first half is all about boot camp. It's about becoming a soldier. It's about dehumanizing yourself enough to be a killing machine. It has all of the star turns from Vincent D'Onofrio, Arlie Ermey. It is the main point of the film. The denouement is the entire second half. It's essential, but it's not as good as the first half. No way.
And here's where I'll quibble, because they're both the same piece. In the second half, you start out with the comedic, you know, with the hopeless hooker, you know, love you long time thing. Funny. Pathetic. But at the end, you have another innocent sacrifice to the war machine. And this happens to be a Vietnamese girl who's fighting for no reason.
Spoiler alert?
I think people have seen it.
Well, if you haven't, spoiler alert.
Yeah, people die. People die. And you know, you need some empathy because she happens to be on the other side. But yeah, it's horrific. And you trained a number of killers to carry out that execution. And she, in effect, she committed suicide herself. It was a murder-suicide.
Okay, but not, but you really believe that the second half is more essential than the first half, or equal?
No, equally. Okay. Equally. If the movie was about the second half, it works as a plot device, but it isn't powerful. If you look at the first half without the second half, it's just a comedy with a very jarring ending.
I could not disagree more. I think it takes a sick mind to view the first half of Full Metal Jacket as a comedy.
Oh, I think it's hilarious.
It can have funny moments, but it's not a comedy. When I watched that movie, I thought that the sergeant's words were kind of funny, but I didn't laugh at that, you know, as a thing in of itself. It was more about how humiliating it was to these real people that he is. I mean, I think it's an aspect of our personality. If I was in boot camp, I would be feeling horrified for these people, and you would be laughing at them.
I would be Private Joker because I would start pulling out my John Wayne impersonation, and he'd come up and punch me in the groin.
No, I would be Vincent D'Onofrio, no doubt.
Well, here's the deal. So you've got this situation in the first half of Full Metal Jacket, right? And it's all these various stories. They're not real, okay? It's a work of fiction. It's like when Nick in Metropolitan comes out about Polly Perkins.
Mercy. Not appropriate at all. A desperate attempt to incur a technical. I will not give a technical for that. Already at one technical.
How'd that happen?
It's not even appropriate, this technical. So I'm going to... No, that's not a technical.
It was a little forced.
Yeah, it was
terrible. But you have seen
that. It was terrible. I'm going to go back to the actual movie and wrap it up. Here's why it's my number third war movie, okay? Because the movie's only half about war. It's more about basic training. And that's why, for me, in this category, I'm going to leave it at three. Go ahead and go with number two.
Well, I forget the other one.
You don't even know what your number two movie is?
I know what...
You want me to give you my number two movie?
Yeah, and maybe we agree. Two.
Because we prepared for this podcast?
We did,
but yes, I don't so know I'll go ahead and give my number two movie.
I don't
movie.
Know what your number two is.
My number two... I don't know if it's number one or number two.
That's what I'm saying.
All right. Well, what do you think? We got two left. We agreed on them.
You give your number two.
It's tough.
Come on, out with it.
My number two is really my number one, but I'm going to give it at number two for discussion, and that's Apocalypse Now.
That's exactly the right call on every level.
Francis Ford Coppola, master director, coming off The Godfathers, fell off a cliff after this movie, but this movie is a visual tour de force. It gets you into the horrors of war through not just a realistic depiction of war, which it has, but a surrealistic depiction of war.
Yep.
It goes beyond the text.
Yeah.
Seriously.
You're inside a lot of different people's heads.
Martin Sheen, clearly his best movie ever.
Yeah, I mean, when I watch that, by the way, it reminds you that Martin Sheen is a great actor. And you rarely see that evidence in any other movie he does.
Right. Also has a great soundtrack.
Yeah, I mean, if you're into the 60s rock.
Which you should be if you care about good popular music.
Yeah, if it's got Dylan, you know.
All right, well, the scene where he's listening to the end and the helicopters and the... that's true. Iconic.
And the Ride of the Valkyries and...
Of course,
that's very obvious. But, you know, Robert Duvall is terrific.
Yeah, he steals every scene he's in. Harrison Ford has a great bit part. And, of course, the legend, the master, Marlon Brando.
Old Brandy.
Sporting the Steven Tim haircut, going crazy, the horror.
And Dennis fantastic. Hopper.
Dennis Hopper, great.
He's just crazy.
Again, of course, very vulgar, very violent. Some sexual content, but it's very realistic depiction.
That opening scene with Sheen and his hotel room.
So many iconic scenes. And what it does is it depicts the madness of war, the madness of our foreign policy, and the madness of humanity because it's based on Heart of Darkness. I mean, war is really a plot device to bring out the darkness that lurks inside the worst corners of the human heart.
Presaging Hillary. You see that when you run afoul of the U.S. government, they're more than happy to take you out.
Oh, yeah. No rose-colored glasses on the U.S. government in this movie.
Yeah.
There's one other thing I wanted to mention about it, though, very briefly. Oh, to let you know how far the acorns fell from the tree, This is the only movie that our parents, to my knowledge, walked out of in the theater. They were there to see the original theatrical run of Apocalypse Now and left. That's the parents.
I walked out on Shine, and I walked out on About Last Night, and I walked out on St. Elmo's Fire. There's my litany.
Really?
Yeah, it's horrific.
Here's one. I walked out on Pirates of the Caribbean.
Good for you. That thing is crap.
Whoa! That is incorrect. That movie's great. That's one of my favorite movies now. But at the time, I was really angsty, and I'm like, I'm not going to watch Pirates. What was wrong with me? It was a great movie.
Maybe your inner soul was talking to you because it's just lousy.
No, Pirates of the Caribbean is a great movie.
Whatever.
Yeah, that's another podcast. All right, let's wrap this bad boy up with our number one war movie of all time. And it's Letters from Iwo Jima. Wow.
Yes.
Wow. An underdog wins it all.
With the great Clint Eastwood.
I think it's the best movie that Clint Eastwood was ever a part of.
Mm, that's rough.
I think so.
Maybe, but he's been in a lot of great ones.
He has. I didn't really think that out before I said it, but I'm going to go with it. It shows, and the reason I like it is because it shows one aspect of the war that doesn't get much treatment, especially with World War II, the greatest generation, the great, you know, we're on the side of the good guys. What do the other guys think about? The Japanese culture is not, it's not lauded and it's also not criticized, but it's examined.
Right. To the extent that the Japanese, like, you take the kamikazes, right? You'd watch a movie like Tora, 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 and, you know, it's like, okay, here comes the enemy, they're willing to waste their people, blah, blah, blah. And you never really get an insight to it, but this movie does that. It is a totally alien way of looking at the value of human life, and yet it isn't without its own sense of dignity and honor. It's tremendously acted, it's very realistic, and it moves you. I think it's... I haven't seen the companion movie, which was, what, Flags of Our Fathers? Mm-hmm. So I can't really compare the two, but that movie blew me away. I was really, really,
yeah,
really
I was, a fan of it. I remember watching it in the theater, and I was emotionally moved in a way that I haven't been by a war movie. Because Apocalypse Now, Full Metal Jacket was shocking and saddening. Iwo Jima and Hacksaw Ridge are the only two movies that I've watched, and it touched me. Like, how can someone do that?
Right.
That's right. With a mixture of horror and admiration. You know?
And you get the view of the other side. And again, it's not... I don't think that Clint Eastwood is trying to just sit there and be anti-American, if you want to.
Not at all.
I mean, you know, it's Clint Eastwood. I mean, but the one guy was a baker. You know, he didn't want to go to war. We keep thinking that the enemy, that we dehumanize them. They're coming to kill us and kill our babies or whatever. They're just the same. You got some poor schlub who gets pulled out of a bakery. You got another guy who's got a wife and a kid. You had another guy who was trapped because his patriotism was questioned, so they yanked him and put him in the army. They don't, you know, they're just as confused about why they're there, or conflicted rather. They want to be brave. They're not brave. They're, you know, they are brave. It's the same as anybody else. There is a common element of humanity in that film that you see.
And to see from an American perspective someone else's story told in a fair way is very unusual. And I learned something, and I learned to think about World War II differently.
Right, and it's the only movie I've ever seen that goes against the patented must-believe U.S. mythos about the war and the justice of that cause.
But you know, and I know what you're about, so I'm not gonna go there. But
I'm not gonna go too far. That's
what I want to say. The best war movies to me have no concept really of the justness of the cause. Because that's a meta-historical view. Those movies become propaganda on one hand, or browbeating on the other.
But they can be great movies, like, for their own sake. They can be Alexander Nevsky. I don't know if you've ever seen them.
I haven't. But what I'm saying is, those can be great movies for what they are. Mm-hmm. But to me, to be truly transcendent in almost any work of art, you have to tell the story of the people, not the story of, you know, like the policy.
The more it gets political, the worse it is.
Exactly. To me, this is a movie about people who are fighting for Japan, not whether Japan was right or the U.S. was right.
Oh, right. No, and it has nothing to do with that, nor do I think it does.
And another thing I wanted to talk about just briefly, because we're running out of time, is the utter devastation that they felt when they realized that they couldn't win, that the emperor wasn't God, that loss of faith. You know, I just can't imagine what that was like for them, and that part of the movie was very compelling.
Yeah.
So, you know, we heartily recommend Letters from Iwo Jima. This list is not in order. Any one of the choices could jump another. They're all essential. Again, be discerning. I'm not recommending them content-free. You know yourself. Look it up if you're comfortable watching it. They're definitely artistically worthy. So most people do the honorable mentions before they give their list. That's not how we do it on the Catholic
not
Movie
the
Guy.
Catholic Movie Guy.
We're not your average podcast.
No.
We're not going to conform to your rules.
You can't make him.
We're going to big up. That's a term.
What's gonna, that? Bigly?
We're going to give propers. We're going to give propers and big up the movies. We're going to shout them out.
Yeah.
We're going to acknowledge them.
Yep.
The honorable mentions.
Yep.
My first honorable mention is really a top five war movie, if it's a war movie. But I eliminated it from the war movies because it's not really a war movie. Or is it? It's absurd. It's Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah.
Great, great picture. Bigly.
Bigly.
Yes.
Bigly.
Wonderful movie.
Yeah.
Peter Sellers is fantastic. Kubrick is the master. He keeps coming up because he's great.
Yeah, it is a great movie.
George C. Scott. Scene stealer. He chews the scene he's in, really.
Yeah, it's terrific.
It's fantastic. Another honorable mention, Black Hawk Down.
Yes. That one just for the realism of the combat.
Exactly. That movie, to me, it belongs on the list because of the realism. But it didn't emotionally affect me like these other movies.
The thing that I thought was best about it is you see in that one film why the AK-47 is the best rifle ever made, because you have a bunch of untrained illiterates with AK-47s that can handle the best technology that the U.S. has to offer. That rifle, although it has killed us, you know, so it's not great, but it is a wonderful rifle.
So I wasn't approaching the movie as like a technical manual on firearms, but I think it's very realistic. It obviously pushes against the, at the time, narrative of that war and our involvement over there. Period.
Clinton's debacle.
Yeah. So I do enjoy the movie. It's a great movie, but it didn't emotionally affect me like these other ones. That's why I missed it. Just missed the cut. That might be number
six. Since you didn't see it, I will mention Saving Private
Ryan. Of course,
Ryan.
Saving Private Ryan. I need to see
it. I didn't think it held together as a narrative overall that well. It had all the hallmarks of a Spielberg, sickly, sweet, pablum puker.
That's the thing I want to say.
But the scene of the D-Day landing is maybe the best
scene
I have ever seen.
And I have seen that scene. It's great. But I haven't seen the whole movie. But Spielberg, that saccharine thing, that's exactly what I was afraid of with Hacksaw Ridge. I was afraid it was going to be the lionizing of one character to a sickly sweet extent. And it wasn't.
Right.
It wasn't.
Like when my daughters watch Little House on the Prairie and I say, would you mind, please, if you can wipe off the sap that's literally running down the screen.
Right. Another honorable mention, Patton. To me, Patton is a great movie. It's a historically important movie. But really, it's a George C. Scott vehicle. And George C. Scott is great. But as a movie, it didn't do it for me like these other movies.
I would throw in Gods and Generals because it's a wonderful, it's a wonderful story. And it gives credit to the Southern cause, which you don't hear anymore. It also gives credit to the Northern cause. It does both, but
it's like Iwo Jima in that regard.
Right, that it attempts to be fair is really nice. And plus the beardage. If you're into like beards, nothing beats a Civil War beard.
And you forgot the most important point, which is that it has
Bob
the Nobel laureate Bob Dylan on the soundtrack with one of his greatest hits, Cross the Green Mountain.
And if you saw the video, he looks so creepy.
Yeah, in fact, don't watch the movie, just listen to the song. It's better than the movie.
And then watch the movie.
Yeah, but it's better than the movie.
Bob.
And then the honorable mentions of things I haven't seen. I'm going to go with The Deer Hunter, which I own and haven't watched yet, and Thin Red Line, like I said.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's lots of great war movies. We could go on forever. But unfortunately, our audience, small as it is, has a limited attention span. So I guess we should wrap it up, don't you think, Tim?
It's like there was a time, okay, you can imagine, if you will, a set of New York debutantes.
Huh.
And it's Christmas Vacation.
Is this about war?
Well, no, it's very limited because they only have
I'm failing to see the relevance.
Well,
I'm sure
it's
very soon that you'll get to the relevant information.
Oh, absolutely. It's like in Metropolitan.
No! 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 Tim's fouled out. Thank you for listening to the Catholic Movie Guy podcast. It was a contentious battle between me and Tim agreeing on nearly everything.
It's Tim, man.
But I'm sure, hey, you're suspended. I'm sure that you enjoyed it because I enjoyed it, and I'm pretty much the barometer for the enjoyment level of the public. So with all due respect to all these war movies, perhaps your favorite war movie wasn't mentioned. I don't care. You know, send me feedback. Review me on iTunes. 5 stars only, of course. If you want to review it 1 star, don't review it. You love the Tin Man, leave a review on iTunes. Send your feedback, catholicmovieguy@gmail.com. You got suggestions, complaints. You want to laud us, you want to tell us how great we are, that's fine. But, you know, next week I think we're going to come back, we're going to switch it up a little bit. I think we're going to pay tribute to the great Nobel laureate Bob Dylan by reviewing one of the Coen brothers' seminal movies, because they're all seminal, Inside Llewyn Davis. And until then, I am the, and no other, the Catholic movie guy.
See you, Wayne.
If you like the music, it's called Waste Technology by Jazar. BetterWithMusic.com. Check him out. Until next time, I am the Catholic Movie Guy.